Welcome back to the Mind of Monty podcast with your hosts, Monty G and IMO. Today we've got a great edition of the podcast for you. We're going to talk about some rumors in wrestling. We're going to give a prediction for Money in the Bank. And we're going to talk about Forbidden Door as well as getting into some marbles. So let's get into rumors, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, I just want to go ahead and coin a new phrase for this segment. It is titled now Rumors Are Just Rumors. That is also my warning for everything that I have to say, because I want everyone to be clear that this is for the most part hearsay. He said, she said, they said. So nonetheless, let's go ahead and get right into it. The WWE roster's reaction to Bruce Pritchard taking over talent relations from John Laurinaitis is generally negative, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter. This is because Laurinaitis was seen as approachable, while Pritchard isn't. One person called the move scary. So that's one person's experience with, this situation. And maybe they had a more of an open relationship when it comes to talking, when it comes to John Laurinaitis. But who knows? We'll see. We'll keep an eye on that just in case we hear anything else. But I don't really know what to do with that because it's out of the employee's control and it's also out of our control. We don't make those decisions. So I just hope that if he wasn't approachable, he is more approachable now that he is in this position. That's the only thing we can look for when you have a story like that. Fightful also reports that Orange Cassidy's theme song will soon change. And if you watch Rampage, and I don't know if it did, it also changed on Dynamite, but it definitely changed. It was definitely different by the time we have Rampage. I haven't seen everything on Dynamite yet. So, maybe I'm tripping. It probably did change there too. If it's already different on Rampage, we'll see. It really doesn't matter. Anyway, they went from they licensed Jefferson Starship's Jane, which is, I'm assuming that's what that was. I heard on Rampage, and which he frequently used on the Indies to replace the Pixies' "Where Is My Mind," which is the song that I don't think you liked when you first heard. You know that song that he had been using that Tony changed Orange Cassidy's song too.
Yeah.
But the license run out on that one, and he's going back to a song he had in the Indies. I don't necessarily have an opinion. It sounds okay so far, but we'll see, as it develops. Anyway, based on how Ric Flair's been talking about him on his podcast, speculation is that Jay Lethal will be one of Ric Flair's opponents at Ric Flair's last match, the show. I think it's a tag.
Oh, okay.
That he's doing. There's no way he's probably going to be able to do one-on-one. We'll see, though. But, yeah. He's been working with him anyway, so I wouldn't be surprised. The guy who's been trying to help pretty much train him or get him reacclimated to being in the ring. I wouldn't be surprised if he's definitely in the match. Dave Meltzer notes that neither WWE nor Jerry McDevitt have commented on the updated Vince McMahon rape allegation. Meltzer speculates that that's because media hasn't picked up the story, so it is not harmful to McMahon's position right now, which is unfortunately the truth of it. Even though I've been seeing certain outlets and certain people pick it up, it's really died down very, very quick. Similarly to the way everything kind of went for Bob Kraft, mm-hmm. Like when his name was in the news for, nefarious stuff. When you're a billionaire, stuff like that can kind of get pushed.
You can make some stuff disappear.
And as long as, like he said, as long as he said the media, the big media outlets are not covering it, and as long as they're focused on, other things, it's not important. And I think, the same can be said probably for the other allegation until something can actually be done to prove something. That's why I think pretty much every week since he's been accused, he showed up on television. I don't necessarily know if it's like if it is him saying, yeah, you can't touch me, but it definitely gives off the vibes of I'm untouchable. So it's just nasty altogether. But we can get into that another time. It seems like McMahon's name and controversy just won't ever not be synonymous. John Cena's return excited the locker room, according to WrestleVotes. Cena is viewed as the ultimate leader with his positive presence. And it was felt throughout the company when he's around. And that makes sense. John is very, very popular. Very, always awesome guy. We all know. By the way, the definition of philanthropy should be John Cena. The type of stuff that he's doing, the little thing they showed of him doing for the Ukrainian family who was forced to evacuate and all that. It's just yeah, man. He's always been great at that, so I'm not surprised that he's continuing, even when he's not full time wrestling. He's continuing to be awesome. I just want to say congrats to him on 20 years. When the anniversary was out, I had to listen to, you know, my album. You can't see me. I listen to all 18 tracks. I still mess with that album. I don't care how bad it's probably aged. It's, as a matter of fact, it's aged bad in a lot of ways now.
So bad.
Now, but I still listen to it. You can attest that even when it's not the anniversary, some songs from that album come on.
Yeah.
I don't care. John Cena had bars still. I mean, maybe he still got a few. I don't know. Maybe not. He's 45. I don't know if I want to hear 45-year-old John Cena rap.
We don't need that. No. No.
Either way it goes, awesome to see him. I do want to celebrate 20 years. Like, let's see. Like I said, definitely a philanthropy goat, if not the greatest of all time. There's nobody greater at doing, you know, good deeds when it comes to, you know, Make-A-Wish and all that type of stuff that Cena's into. So it was awesome to see him. He gave an awesome promo on his anniversary. I love seeing AEW people. I guess you want to say Jericho, even though we know they're like career WWE guys, Big Show, Jericho, and Danielson. It's good to see them send their messages. It's good to see all those legends talking positively about Cena. And I must say, the way the crowd sounds and the way the reception is on social media, man, absence really does make the heart grow fonder. Because many, many years, people wanted Cena to go away. And now, since he's doing his thing,
around the world,
oh my God, everyone wants him back. Oh, this is the true GOAT. We need him.
One more
blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I can't wait for his next run. So, say what you want about Cena, but he did it. And he didn't have to change who he was to do it. You know, everybody was like, oh, no, to get the love he would need to do like a Roman Reigns, turn heel run or whatever. Still haven't done it. Probably never will. He's a superhero. But I definitely wanted to spend some time on Cena because he's one of the reasons that I've been watching over the last 20 years. You know, I've been able to watch him from the beginning. So, to see where he's at now and where he's probably going to be, I'm definitely rooting for him. Anyway, Jon Moxley was busted open the hard way at Forbidden Door, they say. No blading, which makes sense because it definitely was – it was no spot that made the bleeding that he was bleeding, that the way he was bleeding, it was no spot in the match that made sense for that. So they think they bumped head, probably on that sling blade. But we'll see. That's what they said on Wrestling. That's what Brian Alvarez said on Wrestling Observer Radio. Mox mentioned in the post-show interview that he might have gotten a concussion, which is, like I said, probably from knocking heads.
Yeah.
But he said it was just something he said. He's fine. Maybe he passed protocol. But Meltzer said that was just something he said. He's fine.
Oh, no.
So
King Trey
we don't know. Yeah, exactly what it is. I'm hearing that he could be working with injuries or could have been working with injuries. Who knows what's going on at this point? Kurt Angle told NBC Sports Boston that one of the AEW offers he turned down was for 10 matches, but he turned them down because he knows he can't be the old Kurt Angle anymore. And I'm proud because for a long time we've seen – I mean, I'm not trying to throw shade at Ric Flair, but we literally got the situation where Ric Flair just can't leave it alone. Now, I mean, hopefully this is his last match, but we've had situations before where he's supposed to be your last match. Yeah, you know, Ric Flair, he's trying to catch up with Terry Funk, I guess, for the amount of last matches he can have. But I'm definitely proud that we have the opposite end of the spectrum because it's fine to see legends like Sting still doing it and other people coming back and, you know, whatever. But at the same time, knowing that it wouldn't be good for your health and the quality of the matches wouldn't be the same, like, it's important to be able to know that too. You know what I'm saying? It's important to be on both sides of the spectrum, in my opinion. All these comebacks from these legends that we love, like Edge and Christian and all this type of stuff, it can sting. It can motivate you to think, I can do it too.
No.
You know, but you know, you do need to have that thing that goes off in your head that tells you, no, it wouldn't be the same. So I don't want to do it. PW Insider says the belief is Kevin Owens is injured and that's why he missed Raw. And I'm telling you guys right now, PW Insider was right. He did. He is injured. They even acknowledged it on the most recent SmackDown. I'm pretty sure Kevin probably would have been the last Money in the Bank member or Ezekiel, something like that. But you know, no offense to Madcap, but we get Madcap probably in his spot. I'm assuming Kevin was gonna get that, But I don't know. I could be wrong about that, and that was never the plan. Insider also says that both Sasha Banks and Naomi are still listed on the active WWE roster, and neither have been released at this time. So, there you go with that. That kind of sent waves through social media when people found that out, because, you know, I get down to later why, but because Raj Geary had to defend himself. because he kind of started this whole thing. Anyway, Brian Alvarez said he's learned that not much has changed in NXT since Triple H announced he's back. So there you go. I think people probably, I hope you guys weren't expecting him to immediately be like, all right, we turn all this, take it down. We're going back to black and gold. Take all this stuff down.
You like, put a shirt on.
Yeah. You girl, come on, put some tights, real tights, like pants. You don't need
wrestling gear.
Whatever. Yeah. All this flirting is over. That's what y'all thought was going to happen. No, I mean, even if it does happen, it wouldn't be overnight anyway, but we'll see. He wasn't backstage. So, a lot of people are not sure if he's actually back. Like he said, maybe he's just saying I'm back at work. You know, we don't know what capacity yet, but that'll all be unveiled in due time. For whatever it's worth, Tony Khan claimed that Forbidden Door event garnered over 5 million on pay-per-view. So
I can claim I got 5 million in the bank.
Apparently even the people who wrote this rumor did not believe it. So I don't know. Reacting to recent reports that Sasha Banks is still listed on internal WWE rosters, Wrestling Inc.'s Raj Geary stood by his report saying she'd been released, but tweeted the rumor is that leadership is trying to smooth things over with Banks. Are they trying to Kota Ibushi this situation? At least that's what Raj Geary is trying to say.
Yeah, he's trying to say,
I don't know. Things. WWE don't seem like the New Japan type. I don't think I can see them Kota Ibushi ring and apologizing. You know what? We're sorry.
They've already done it and they've already lied.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see them going full-fledged Kota Ibushi, but he also said Sasha's release was finalized June 10th and handled by Erica Schreiber, VP of Business and Legal Affairs for Talent Relations, not John Laurinaitis, who usually handles those. I don't know. That could have something to do with him losing his role. Maybe not, but if it's June 10th, I guess that was earlier than the drama. I don't know. Either way it goes, this is his information. He's trying to defend himself. And all I have to say is, Raj, until she's actually out of that door, you're going to keep getting bombarded with people saying, look at you, you don't know what you're talking about. Woo, 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 woo. So until it's official, prepare yourself. That's all I can say about that. By the way, apparently at the Blood and Guts, which just is very unfortunate, Santana had a brutal knee injury, and Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez, said the early words that he might have torn multiple ligaments, ACLs, MCLs, whatever's in there. Thanks for that medical expertise.
I'm reading this with you, and I'm like, ACL? There's only one ACL. There's only one
ACLs, MCLs.
Just whatever's don't say in there. Just say he tore his knee up.
Yeah, just say, say you don't know. Because that's basically the same thing as, undisclosed brutal knee injury.
Yes.
He just probably won't be back for a while.
We're not saying he shattered his patella or anything.
And speaking of that, they say he's been counting down on his social media, and he's possibly leaving AEW in September. So. Soon. They even saying him and Ortiz aren't getting along anymore, which sucks if it's true. But, you know, who knows if that even have anything to do with anything. He has been taking solo booking for a while. And if his knee injury is long-term, would he get WWE or would he still be free in September from AEW?
They don't do that.
I don't think they do, right. So I think that possibly could have been, Santana's last appearance in AEW, depending on how bad this knee injury is and what they want to do going forward. I must say that if it is over, Ortiz and Santana had way too much potential to not have touched or grabbed that brass ring, as they call it, that is the tag team championships, at least one serious run. But doing all this stuff with, of course, they've achieved a lot of great moments, but with being in the inner circle, being going against the Jericho Appreciation Society, all of this stuff has taken them away from the tag team focus, at least from where they belong to be looked at with the Lucha Bros, with the Bucks. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So the fact that they were kind of separated from that, and FTR, the fact they were separated for that for so long, and now this possibly is the end, I must say that is a very, very, it's a big letdown for me because I like them so much.
Very disheartening.
Yeah, it's a letdown. But we'll see. You know, a lot of stuff is changing in AEW every day, all the time. They have plenty of talent, so I'm not saying this is going to kill AEW, but dropping the ball with people like that who are AEW originals, you know, slowly but surely, the AEW people who've been here or people who held them down during the pandemic, slowly but surely dropping off.
Yeah.
You know, not all of them, but it's a chunk of them. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on stuff like that. Maybe we're all wrong and these rumors are wrong and he signs back and he has plenty more, you know, success with AEW. We'll see. Last but not least, I think, yeah, Wrestling Observer Radio's Dave Meltzer said WWE is considering the call-ups to the main roster of NXT wrestlers Sanga and or Sang. It probably ain't Sanga, but they wrote Sang here, but I could have swore they said Sanga on television, but who knows, man. I'm going to go with Song right now. Song and Zion Quinn, because I watch NXT, but to show you how much I watch NXT. Right there. WWE really believes that Quinn is the total package. Zion Quinn,
you
know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you've seen him, if you look at Zion Quinn, you know what they're talking about.
Yes.
His looks, his, the way he's built. In the ring, I haven't really got a chance to see him do much longer than 5 minutes of wrestling for the most part. So, you know, that's questionable, but they don't care about any of that. It's more about how he looks. Song, although, to point this out, with their recent run with Shanky and what they're doing with Veer, he would be. I can also see how he fits right in. He's a huge guy. He has the, you know, by the way, he loves his nice mustache. He has a nice mustache beard combination. But anyway, he also has potential because I guess WWE is returning to the land of the giants in a way, or land of bigger people. Because
I guess,
you know, if you really think about it, Aziz, I don't know. You know, like I told you once before, Aziz might be on the fence, but
he might be out of
if
job.
You add him, yeah. And then you, I mean, Mace 6'8", T-Bar, big guy. Oh yeah, Mace, not Mace, no longer Mace, Mace. By the way, that was hilarious, Mansoir. Oh my goodness, Dupree killed it. Anyway, I told you I was gonna do it. I told you I was gonna do it. Anyway, Mace 6'8". Oh, I'm glad they didn't make T-Bar a model. I was trying to make T-Bar French, but you can't. T-Barre.
T.
Just T. T with the accent, yeah. Mark. Just T with the accent mark. Anyway, yeah. He's 6'7" or whatever. Anyway, the point is they got a lot of big guys. So Song fits right in. But anyway, I just wanted to get my thoughts on that because I know some people come to this show expecting my NXT takes, because I am the NXT expert on the WNR podcast. Go there for NXT stuff because I try to separate the two for my own sanity, not you guys. But yeah, let's go right into it. What's next? We're going Money in the Bank, because I think that's my last rumor. And I do want to remind you guys that rumors are just rumors. If none of this is true, so be it.
All right, so let's predict Money in the Bank. First up, we got the Usos versus the Street Profits for the Tag Team Championships.
Well, I wasn't really sure on this one for a little while, because I was like, could they actually book the Street Profits? Because they actually did. So it's two interesting things they've done in the story building this up, and that is mention that the Street Profits have not had much success at all against the Usos ever, which
it's true.
Usually when that happens,
yeah,
that they're telling you that for a reason. But on this most recent go-home show here on SmackDown, when they had their promo back-to-back, Kayla Braxton in the question said, you know, whoever her source is was talking about, is it true that you guys aren't getting along towards the Street Profits?
What?
And when they planted that seed for nothing, really, it really made me wonder. I'm like, okay, so they keep harping on the fact that the Street Profits are hungry. They really want this tag title run. It's been 100 and some days since they were champions. I'm thinking that
ain't that long.
That inexact. It's not. But I'm thinking, you know, that we go with the Usos retaining here, and possibly, I don't necessarily know if they're gonna do it right then. I don't think you should, because I don't think they've teased it enough. But I think they need to fall here, and you continue to play up the angst or whatever it is between Montez and Angelo, because we haven't really seen it on television, really. In my opinion. And they mentioned it on Kayla mentioned it out of nowhere like that.
Well, everybody been given
unprovoked.
Tez props on his body. We got The Rock out here talking about it. So her source is probably Bianca.
Wow. Okay.
Bianca out here like, nah, they ain't really been you, a long hold girl.
Don't put her in there. Don't do that. Don't do
it's
Bianca.
B. It's no, B. It's B. She out here stirring the pot.
Don't do her like that. But I will say, like I said, I think we've all talked about it for a while now, or anyone can see it, that Montez is going to be awesome, or he can be awesome on his own.
Not to say that I don't Angela know if it's can't. Not his
time. Yeah, I don't know. But I don't know what it is when it comes to that. I don't necessarily think you do it now either, but you don't plant that seed. You don't say something like that for nothing.
No.
You know?
Do they just not care about these tag team titles? I know they don't, but there's literally nobody else. Who's such a scared of the Viking Raiders?
I mean,
I'm sorry, the new vicious Viking Raiders.
Well, they the only new team in the situation. Well, not new, but because the thing is, they're new. But it's like, it's funny because I guess WWE want us to forget that the Usos just made them look like nothing. Not too like for over the SmackDown titles before they joined them up, they yeah. beat them and just, you know, basically kicked them off the show.
Yeah, that's for exactly a few what months.
Happened. So, but they're not gonna be fighting anytime soon because they're vicious now. And the Usos are going to continue to be heels, most likely, with Roman. So, they're right. not going to fight soon. So, I don't know. Probably some impromptu team. Probably something to do with Riddle down the line.
Trash.
Maybe. You know, I'm telling, this is what WWE we're talking about.
Honestly.
They're the definition of just making makeshift teams. So, anything is possible. But, right. yeah, I don't think they need to do it now. Though. We don't have to worry about that. I don't think the Street Profits are going to break up right now. I just don't think they're going to win.
All right, so I agree with you. I think the Usos going to win, but I said I think it's going to be some nefarious deeds.
Yes, definitely.
Definitely not a clean win because they got to extend this out. Next up, we've got Theory versus Bob Lash for the U.S. Championship.
Bobby's looked so strong going into this. It's really, really making me worried because I'm like, all right, I think Bobby can win this title. And the thing is, though, and I don't know what the long-term plans are for Bobby, you know, if he is a United States champion, what do you give him to do? Do he continue to feud with Theory going forward into SummerSlam? Are they going to pull the trigger on Cena and Theory in SummerSlam like people thought? I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the case because I feel like they probably would already be kind of – I guess they did technically kind of build it on that show, but I feel like if Cena was coming back, Vince would already be saying, hey, he'll be here next week because he wants that rating pop. So that's my only thought process about that. I don't really know, man. This was really, really tough. I just wrote down Theory because I'm thinking since Bobby has looked so strong here, Theory cheating him won't necessarily take away from who Bobby is. So I'm going through some type of distraction. Maybe Vince sends some help out. I don't know. Anything to take advantage of Bob in a way. That's the only way I can see it happening because I don't know. I don't necessarily know if you take the belt off Theory quite yet, even though, honestly, I would not mind it if Bobby won. It's just, again, I feel like you got more plans going forward with Theory than you possibly have with Bobby either way. So, Theory.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the opposite pick. I think Bob is going to get it because they kind of took away the Roman thing. So, it's like, here's a consolation prize, one, and then I really just don't like Austin Theory, so I'm picking with my heart.
See, that, and there we go. And that's the only reason why I didn't pick Bob either, because I'm like, I feel like I'm just flat-out picking who I like or who I would want to win. While, you know, in this case, I can see them going with the, you know, the company guy.
Yeah, I got you. Next up, we got Ronda Rousey versus Natalya for the SmackDown Women's Championship.
I give Natty. And I guess Ronda also, their props on socials for trying to continue to build this. It hasn't been they're not without cringe.
So cringe.
They do. They're both can be. They both can be very cringe.
Natty so corny.
But like I said, I think Natty, the story they're telling or whatever, especially with the video package they showed last night, it seemed like you look at that video package, you think this was just
a festering awesome rivalry.
Storytelling, right? But anyway, I'm going with Ronda. I don't think anyone expects Natty to win. I think it'll be a nice shock to do if you wanted to shock everyone, but it's just no way, yeah. Right? It's Ronda. So I don't really have much to say on I don't think there's any deep thought that have to really be put into this.
I agree. Rhonda's gonna win. Next up, we've got Bianca versus Carmella for the Raw Women's Championship.
Yeah, unfortunately, because of Rhea Ripley's injury, this is another one that's kind of like the last match where it's like, ah, no way B's losing, right? And if you wanted to give Carmella the belt for, like, shock reasons, fine. But I promise you, it's just hard for me to delete this out of my head, especially when they was at Rolling Loud and Bianca was jobbing Carmella out for the 16th time. That's so it's just like, are you really trying to convince me that the person she just straight up dog walked her entire run on SmackDown is going to up and beat her all of a sudden? I don't forget that easily. I promise you. And that just shows you that they're not as deep anymore. But, you know, of course, this is a last-minute situation. I don't mind Carmella being in the spot. She is solid enough in the ring and, you know, pretty good at getting heat. So this could be okay, but I'm still going to Bianca.
I agree, like, easily. next up, we've got the women's Money in the Bank ladder match with Lacey Evans, Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Asuka, Shotzi, oh, I forgot they took her last name away, and Becky Lynch.
Yeah, so I'm going with Becky Lynch. I just want to go ahead and just give my peek. This is really one of the hardest ones to predict. I didn't really know where to go, in all honesty. It's just like I was thinking about it, and I'm like, do they want to do what they did just last year and give a baby face the briefcase, and then, you know, it end up fizzling out? And I'm not saying it would if it was Liv here, but I've just seen this story too many times. WWE seemed to do a much better job of booking heels in this situation. But I don't know. Maybe I'm picking wrong here too, because it's just tough. Like, Liv is a great choice. And I really think she probably should be the choice, because, like, when is she going to get that moment? But I do think the more she fails, that also can kind of play in her favor too, in a way. But I guess you don't want her to fail too much either. So it's a fine line, man. It's a fine line. But in this ladder match, I don't think anybody would be like, oh, Liv, you weak. You lost the Money in the Bank ladder match. I mean, no. It's going to be, what, six losers. So, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I don't necessarily – I'm going with Becky just because it feels like going into it, the people who have the most active storyline is Becky Lynch. And like I said, Liv is kind of in that deserving spot. I don't necessarily know if Raquel – I don't think Raquel is ready or that she even really needs it, but that's also a possibility. Alexa is the wild card for me because I don't think she needs always it, whatever, but she definitely always can win. So it's just tough. I feel like if you're not going to build Liv Morgan up as a star and give her an accomplishment, then you can give Becky the only thing she doesn't have, and I think her teasing Ronda or Bianca over the next few months can be great TV.
I don't agree with Becky because I'm going to pick somebody different. But there's only two heels in this match.
Yeah.
There's Shotzi and there's Becky.
Pretty much.
And we've got two baby faces.
Whatever champions. You want to call Lacey. Whatever Lacey is. Because they claim she's something else, but they're booking her still like she's a face. So, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know about Lacey. But I'm going to pick Shotzi because she was a locker room leader in that one skit I saw.
Oh, Lord, no. Okay.
And
she's the one I'm giving no shot.
I know. That's why I was like,
she's taking all the pins. So you saying she's been getting, you know, embarrassed. So, like, yeah, she's going to step up and surprise everyone.
Yeah.
It'll be a good surprise. And like you said, again, I think in a similar way of what I was talking about with Liv, it would elevate someone. So I wouldn't have a problem with that because it's fresh. But I still think it'll be a big surprise. I don't know. I really couldn't decide here. So I just went with who I think WWE favors the most. But yeah, it was hard.
This was really hard. I agree. And I'm just choosing Shotzi because I want to see her do better. And she is a heel. And if she got this position, I think it would be good for her overall character, give her something to go with.
I mean, she needs something.
She needs something.
Honestly.
She got to stop going around saying she's ballsy.
I mean, she's probably not going to stop that part.
No. Let me finish.
Go ahead.
She has to stop doing that, but then not getting the results.
Yeah. Even, you know, and then she's not even consistently on TV enough for us to know she's ballsy.
That's true. I remember when she went over in NXT against Shayna Baszler. So I had more expectations for Shotzi on the main roster than what I've currently seen, and I just want her to
So you miss, but you see, so you're remembering things different, not differently, but
she didn't win.
She was a baby face though.
Ah, yeah.
She shined really, really brightly in NXT as a face. So once they brought her to the main roster and they made her kind of do something that what we're not necessarily accustomed to seeing her do, not necessarily saying she can't do it or hasn't been doing a good job. It's just, it was different. So I don't necessarily know if WWE knows what they want to do. Remember, she came in as a tag team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Honestly, we talked about this before. She's been on the SmackDown roster, and they have not fleshed out
her character at all.
They've not fleshed out her, Zaya, Aaliyah. You know what I'm saying? A lot of the newer faces on SmackDown, they haven't really fleshed them out anyway. At all.
Okay. Last match of the night, we've got the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match. We've got Seth Rollins, Sheamus, Drew McIntyre, Amos, Sami Zayn, Matthew Riddle, and Madcap Moss.
This was another tough one, but only because I believe it's really three viable winners. Seth Rollins, obviously. Riddle, because of the way he's been depicted on television and how much the people really seem to be getting behind him.
He can't, though.
What you mean? He can't. Oh, but he can't even challenge Roman. He would have to hold the brief. So that actually can disqualify him, actually, now that I think about it, because I think he would have to hold the briefcase until Roman loses. And if Riddle wins, does that mean Brock has to win to make him even a threat? So, yeah, that's fair. I guess they can disqualify him. But what I'm trying to say is, but based on the way he's been booked so far, he's an option. No one else is even close, almost, other than him. Sami Zayn, in my opinion, because of the conundrum with the bloodline and all that, I do think that'll make good television.
Yeah.
And like I said, Seth Rollins, because of the mind games he can play with Roman going forward. And the fact that since Roman has never beaten him, he is a legitimate threat, and we know that match is going to happen somewhere, you know, or somehow. And I love Drew, and I think he's a great option also. The thing is, I just don't necessarily know. Drew's been so close to getting his shot, or at least he's been deserving of this shot for so long. You're right. The Money in the Bank would be a way for him to usurp that, but I just don't necessarily want him to win it and then just cash it in, announce it pre-time, and like, you know what I mean? Or he says he's going to do it literally after the last man standing match at SummerSlam, and I've never seen anyone be so detailed about what they're going to do with the briefcase and they actually be able to win it and do everything. Like, you can do it that way. Like, he was so detailed in what he was going to do to where I think they kind of spoiled it for me that Drew would actually win it, because I'm like, okay. Well, if he's literally telling me now that he's going to try to cash in at SummerSlam, then I don't necessarily know. Now, I mean, it is an idea. He win it, cash in at SummerSlam, and then he goes into these next few shows as champion, and it's possible, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just counting Drew out. I wouldn't be mad if Drew win it, though. I want to tell you guys that right now. But I'm going with Seth Rollins. I think he's the strongest choice. Much in the same way that I said with Becky, I think him going forward, teasing Roman Reigns and all of that can be compelling television. You can get more Seth Rollins on your TV screen, most likely, because Roman goes to both shows. Seth should be allowed to tease him on both shows. We'll see. But I don't know. Again, this Money in the Banks were toss-ups, and maybe I'm picking with my heart when I say Seth here, because I feel like he deserves it. You know what I'm saying? It's still one of those things where I was just like, I had to go with Seth Rollins. It's just hard for me to rationalize anybody else without thinking about how it would compare to what if Seth won. And also, I think going forward, Seth definitely can just jump into another feud just the same way anybody else can. But I think having Money in the Bank around also would just be too good of an opportunity to miss, in my opinion. But, you know, I could be wrong. That's the thing about these Money in the Bank when you got 7-8 people, you know, in the match. Anything can happen. I assume we're going to get awesome matches, though, and I think that's what we want at the end of the day. So that's my Money in the Bank predictions. Take it to the bank, you know, pun intended, I guess. but, yeah, that's all I have to say about that. I don't really have much else. Let's run through Forbidden Door. All
right, let's get it.
So to get through the buy-in, QT and Air Solo went against Goto and Yoshihashi in a really, really good tone-setting match for the show. And it was solid action. Goto and Yoshihashi looked really good, and the goal was accomplished. I thought that was a textbook, type of pre-show match. Lance Archer versus Nick Comoroto. Like I said, what a shame that we don't get a chance to see Comoroto enough to think he actually had a chance in this match. But it was still a good showcase for Archer going into the G1, so that was acceptable. Talking about Swerve and Lee versus Despy and Conor Morrow, this match was awesome. It had a little bit of everything, and it showcased the miscommunication between Swerve and Keith Lee. Despy and Conor Morrow showcased why they are an awesome team, and they wrestled very, very smart. You know, Lee was the bigger guy, and they took his leg out. You know what I'm saying? And the ending, starting with the Satori Surprise, which I'm pretty sure shocked a lot of people. A lot of people wasn't ready for the whiskey to the face from Conor Morrow, but definitely an awesome spot. But when Swerve did the leg sweep to a thrush kick and then a double stomp, just insane stuff. And it was an early highlight, man. It was an excellent match for me. LA Dojo versus Billy Gunn and Max Caster. This was fine, and, you know, it was good fun, especially since Billy especially when Billy got in the ring and destroyed everyone. It was just hilarious to me. But I was perplexed because I'm like, okay, what did Austin and Colton, you know, they never came back. What are they doing? And but the match was solid, and it didn't bother me, even though it kind of seemed rushed because it was towards the end of the buy-in. So it was passable. I do want to go ahead and talk about the Gun Club are no longer in, I guess. Well, no, the Ass Boys are no longer in the Gun Club, or the Acclaimed, I guess. I don't know
what that means. Like that.
Either way it goes, they're beefing, and Billy chose Max and Anthony over his own kids.
He was always a little too tan for his kids.
There you go. He chose them over his own kids. The Jericho Appreciation Society, or just, you know, Jericho, Sammy, and Suzuki versus Eddie Kingston, Shota Umino, and Wheeler Yuta. This was incredibly fun from the beginning when Yuta was doing the swing, doing the German suplexes on Jericho. I think everyone had moments to shine. Shota and Yuta looked like huge future stars for New Japan and AEW, wherever you see them going forward, that they will definitely be the future. And Suzuki looked like a menace. I want an Eddie Kingston versus Suzuki match, please, because they were just going at it. And this also, you know, added heat going into Blood and Guts. So I loved it. And the way it was put together, no one looked like a loser here, you know? So it was incredible work. Plus, Shota Umino really impressed a lot of people. A lot of new fans got a chance to see what makes Shota so awesome. So, and same thing with Wheeler Yuta here. So I really like that even though everyone looked strong, they still found enough spots to make the young guys look great. FTR, the United Empire, and Roppongi Vice, it turned into an incredible tag match. Well, each team, even Roppongi Vice, looked really strong because, you know, even with the injury spot coming in, I think it was Dax who had the injury. And then for him to do that, it meant for him to come back, you know, and kind of make it a comeback victory for FTR, I thought it added an underdog element to this match. And it put doubts in my head about where it would even go. So I even gave Roppongi a chance, who, if you remember when I was predicting it, I didn't give them a chance at all. Mm-hmm. So this was an excellent match. I thought it turned out perfect. And FTR picking up the win was the right move, in my opinion. Pac, Miro, Clark Connors, and Malakai Black, the four-way for the All-Atlantic title. This was incredible. It kicked into high gear to me after Clark Connors speared Miro through that table. And, man, the fans went crazy, and the whole match just went bonkers after that. And I was into that finish. I picked Miro to win. I was very, very pissed at Malakai Black for missing Miro when he had the submission victory in his grasp. But, you know, I was happy for a minute to be wrong, because when Pat came in, you know, hit his finish and kind of took advantage of the situation and won the match by making Connors tap. I just loved how we kind of got to that finish. This was awesome stuff. Congrats to Pac. Definitely well deserved. Dudes with Attitude versus Bullet Club. Sting jumped off something from the very beginning of the match. That's what Sting does every pay-per-view. I hope they really give him a nice bonus for all the diving he's doing in his 60s.
He is not 60.
I thought he was in the early 60s. I could be wrong. Anyway, This was good fun, man. Very funny moments. I thought Sting looked incredible.
Oh, shit.
He was having the time of his life.
The he reaction is 63.
Scenes. Yeah, I told you. All right, there we go. I knew I wasn't lying. Yeah, 63. Ugh. Awesome. Got to remember, he was young when him and Warrior were teaming.
I know.
You know, rest in peace, but Warrior ain't here no more.
Why did I think he was in his 50s?
I don't know. That was the impact run. He was in his 50s. But yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Shingo picked up the win here. That was the finish I was actually hoping for, because I wasn't really sure that I was going to see it. Even though I picked Bullet Club, I wasn't really sure that I was going to see it. I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't go with my first thought and just stick with Shingo and then pulling out the win. But it is what it is. I thought that ELP had a good chance to tease what makes him so special. So this was good stuff all around. Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm. Really thought it was disrespectful that the fans were kind of leaving and moving around so much during this match. But Thunder Rosa's gear, she looked like $1 million. This was a very physical and emotional match. You can see their facial expressions. You can see the way they were screaming. That both ladies were really into it and were on point, in my opinion. And they were wrestling like their lives were on the line in moments, man. And I thought they could keep going, honestly, because it was that good. But, you know, it kind of finished abruptly, in my opinion, with Thunder Rosa not being able to finish her with her own finisher, but being able to finish her with Dustin's finisher. I'm not a big fan of that finish, but it is what it is. Still a strong match. Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. A lot of people's match of the night. I can't do this justice, man. Only thing I must say is that this made me realize how much AEW has missed Orange Cassidy. And, you just kind of miss that element of what he can do. And you can tell they missed it because, man, he was awesome here against Ospreay. I couldn't help but notice how big Ospreay looked next to Orange Cassidy, because it's funny when I think about how Ospreay was just a junior heavyweight. But anyway, Orange Cassidy looked great. He looked strong in defeat. Ospreay showed why he's the man. And, you know, they could fight forever and I'd be down. That was my rating for that one. Zack Sabre Jr. versus the returning, not a drummer, though. That's like the joking drum thing. But Claudio, if you didn't know, Castagnoli. Yeah, Claudio. Incredible to see him, obviously. Another dream match. Incredible to see all the WWE friends from the past congratting him across enemy lines, so they say. I guess they're enemies. They're not. But this is another dream match where Brian is this is a dream match whether Brian was there or not, you know? And I thought this was going to be really, really great from the moment I realized who it was, you know, and this match was, you know, they did a great job of showcasing what makes both guys special. This was European wrestling at its finest, and the Combat Club is by far one of the most stacked factions in existence when you ask somebody like Claudio, so I have no problem with that. Great, great stuff from both people involved. And now, last but not least, let's get into these two main events. Okada versus Paige versus Jay White versus Adam Cole. They got a standing ovation before they even touched in that four-way, so you can just tell these are four of the biggest stars in the world, and it just felt like a big deal. The match was really, really good for the most part, and they gave it all they could, in my opinion. They had Fight Forever chance during it, so that means the fans were liking what they were seeing, and Okada felt like a big deal. He almost felt like the biggest deal in the match. He stole the show in a lot of ways. The fans were definitely behind Kazuchika Okada, and they even did the zoom out on the Rainmaker pose, which popped me because I'm just like, ah, okay, they understand the little fan service cues for us New Japan fans. They know what to do for, you know, they know. They, as a matter of fact, they did a good job with that for the whole night for the most part. So, the Rainmaker spot towards the end there where Adam Cole kind of collapsed, you know, obviously didn't go as planned, but, you know, I'm finding out he was already working hurt. So, at the time, I was like, I just hope all is fine. I think he was concussed, and they just kind of went with the finish. The finish was, you know, a letdown because Jay White just had to run in there and pin him. But it was still, you know, I'd rather, you know, people be safe. It was still a fantastic match, and I wish Adam Cole the best because it didn't really look too good there at the end. But, yeah, still fantastic stuff by everybody involved there. And last but not least, the main event, I just have really one tagline about the Moxley and Tanahashi match, and that is nobody can make you believe like Hiroshi Tanahashi. You know, besides of like the something that was going on off camera early in the match, the fans were really into this, and it was really strong wrestling here on both sides. Great counters, and it was just the world title match intensity just kind of started to ramp up as the match went on. Moxley was amped up from the beginning. Tanahashi was selling like the legend he is. Moxley was like I mentioned earlier, bleeding the hard way, just a lot of blood. So it was just physical, and it just felt like a legit main event. And then when I heard Go Ace chants in AEW, it just kind of crystallized what makes Forbidden Door so special. It showed that even if it was for a second, even if we all thought we knew how the main event would turn out, Tanahashi still made them people believe that he had a chance, or that they should root for him. And I don't necessarily know if there's anybody that can really hook you in wrestling like Tanahashi can. And I was riding such a high after this match that I even watched the media scrum afterwards, listening to them basically talk about the show. That's just how much I enjoyed this show. I had a lot of people after the show talking about how much they want to watch New Japan, and seeing a lot of people just marveling, man, these New Japan guys are good, and woo-woo-woo-woo. And it's just like, you know, that's dope, because it kind of confirmed. Not that I thought I was crazy for liking New Japan, but it confirmed what I already know, that this is some awesome stuff that just a lot of people around the world don't get a chance to see. So my match of the night was Tanahashi, Mox, and Ospreay and Orange Cassidy, two of the best matches on the show, two of the best matches of the year, in my opinion. And, I wish they ended the show with just Tanahashi and Moxley standing tall. I think that was pretty much the last thing I said, or last thing I thought, because they tried to set up Blood and Guts at the end there, and I really didn't think it was necessary. Just unneeded. But other than that, I know that was breathy. That was a lot of talking, but I tried to run through it, believe it or not, as fast as I could. Anyway, I appreciate you guys for listening to that. Let's get into the most... This is what you guys been waiting for. You guys, you know, sick of me, all this wrestling talk. So I'll let her take it away.
Okay, Moe's Marbles is pretty interesting today. So, of course, as you should know, I've been talking about it for at least a week now, or possibly more weeks. But J-Hope released his lead-off single for his solo album, Jack in the Box. So lead-off single is called More. All week, he had been haunting me with these concept photos, with the teaser. It is completely the opposite of what you thought Hope World was, with all the bright colors, all of that. It's completely different. It's black and white. It's heavy eyeliner and eyeshadow. It is angsty, to say the least. Visually, it is very angsty. But the song debuted or released yesterday, and Monty and I listened to it personally, and I'll get into how you feel about it in a second. But personally, I think it was very well balanced. I liked it. I like it, but I was like, that's past tense now. So I was trying to correct it in the moment. Didn't work out. I liked the song anyway.
Okay, there we go.
I definitely see what he was going for with the track. It seems kind of old school hip hop in the drum structure, and then you have a little bit of emo with the guitar riff for, what did you calculate, like 45 seconds of the song?
Yeah, like in total, the guitars only come in for the chorus, I think twice, really. And I think it's like broke up into like four different bars, I guess you can kind of say. But anyway, I counted them all, and it was like, yeah, about 45 seconds.
Like 45 seconds of...
For the most part.
Of
50 seconds, maybe, if you want to be more technical.
50 seconds, yeah. of guitar, which gave it very emo vibe, especially with him screaming far away into the microphone. Some people on the internet was like, he's screaming at us from inside of the box. A lot of TikTok memes were spawned because, you know, this is not the Hobie that everyone is used to. But I've also seen that this is not Hobie anymore. This is Jung Hoseok, man.
And I don't know if it's him either.
We don't know, but I'm saying that is the theory.
You gotta go into it. You can't just tease that. The statement he was speaking, like, whoever wrote that.
He wrote it.
Was not, you say that, but he was not speaking from the perspective that he was J-Hope or Jung Hoseok. Even though apparently he's supposed to be.
Both of them.
Both of those people.
The Weaver statement in which he is referencing J-Hope's account on Weverse. He spoke in first person and he also spoke in third person when referring to J-Hope and both Jung Hoseok.
Exactly. So we don't know who that was. We don't know who wrote the statement. He may not have nothing to do with it.
It was a little dissociative personality disorder there for a moment.
This was Jack.
Was it Jack? Is this Jack?
That's who they were. Yeah, it's Jack.
Okay, this is
until we know more. That's Jack. Who gave that statement?
But I do really enjoy the song. My favorite part is when he's talking about surfing on the beat. I have to say that because he is literally saying surfing on the beat. Yes, yeah,
he's surfing on the beat.
So what did you think about it? What did you think about it?
At first, I was indifferent, I guess. But I think that more so had to do with how I consumed it. Because when I watched the video, I was more so just trying to look at the video, see what it looked like, the imagery, get an impression on what he was going for. Mm-hmm. And once the guitars and all that came in, I see what he's doing. I already like. You remember I played the little 20-second teaser a billion times because I already liked the little drum beat.
Yes.
That he had chose for it anyway. So that part was I had no problem to get into it. I didn't fall and actually felt like I needed to hear this song a lot until I heard it in the car.
Until you went outside.
And I turned it up, right. And you hear the production all the way. And then the drums really hit when you turn it on out there. And then the guitars hit even better. The bass and they really play really well there, and I think it sounds better in your headphones or sounds better in a place where you can actually account for how all the the way the production
where you can sounds. Absorb
because from through the television from a music video it didn't take away from it because I still can hear the quality of it. It just feels different in my opinion. It feels like better turned up really loud. In a place like in your vehicle or in a box, it sounds really good in a box, I guess, or in your headphones. So yeah, man, I don't mind it. I really like it. I think it's growing on me too. The more I listen to it, it's just like now I know this has nothing to do with. I'm sorry to bring this up during Marvel, but it's just like the Catch a Body song with Chris Brown. It's the little things a lot of times for me. Sorry in the background.
Yeah, you missed the whole line that you said was problematic because he said sorry.
Yeah, I'm just too busy focused on him in the background. It'd be the little things for me that make me want to come back to a song. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like it so far. I'm really interested in to hear how everything else sounds. Is he gonna lean more into that what we like I said, them 40, 55 seconds that is a kind of a punk or a rock song? Or are we going to lean into more of
the old school
the drum? Yeah.
Or is it going to be both?
Rapping? Or they're going to continue to mesh. We'll see. That's what I'm more interested in. It definitely made me want to see what's coming. And I think that's the point of an opening single is to, make intrigue people enough to be like, I'm going to check out this project so I can hear more.
And I want some more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That was basically my takeaway.
Right, you can't put it any better than that. And he said it too. Basically, that's what he's saying, in this song. He expresses himself, and now it's time to give you even more.
For us, what our His process art. Is, we watch the video, we break down lyrically, we see what he's saying lyrically, and I appreciate what he said lyrically, and then we'll go watch the video again, and we'll just focus on the video.
And with their videos, it's weird, and I'm not trying to say, I don't know if this is exclusive to K-pop, because it might not be. Probably you can do it with a lot of other music videos, too. But you just pick up stuff the more you watch it.
Yeah.
I
found myself singing really, along to the chorus.
Yeah.
As we continue to watch and listen from different parts of the day.
Oh, yeah, in the video, the fact that all of it, pretty much the whole set that he's walking through the whole video is in a box.
It
genius.
It is
genius.
Why? Also, Army saw all of the hidden gems. They saw V.
Don't they always?
V is in the video. I don't think he was supposed to be in the video because he's wearing sandals and he looks obviously out of place. But he probably showed up to the set to support Hobie because everybody loves Hobie. And he was like, can I get in the video? I was in Daydream video. And Hobie was like, yeah, go ahead. It'll be a good little surprise. And then there's the light fixtures that are the Army BTS logo symbol thing. There's a lot of Easter eggs that if you're just enjoying the song, you will definitely miss because I didn't see it until people pointed it out. But yeah, that's why we have those people.
You've been hyping this up for a while now, so I'm about to segue for you. Let's get into it, man.
Okay.
You have to talk about this game that you've been slightly addicted to.
I haven't played it yet today.
Okay, that's progress. Let's get into it though. Talk about it.
All right. So BTS In the Song released, and again, like I said, it released at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock on the day of my test, 7 p.m., 8 p.m. on June 27th. So I had taken my test. I need to come home or come to the hotel and rewind and unwind. And I see the notification that it had downloaded. I was like, oh snap! It downloaded. Let me take a look at this. At first.
That was a dramatization for you people.
It was. At first, I was like, all right, whatever. It's just a little, you know, Candy Crush game. But I realized I haven't stopped playing it. I didn't play it this morning, but I haven't stopped playing it since it downloaded to my phone and iPad, respectively. The story is cute. The interactions between the Godfinger, which is me, and Bontan is even cuter. Like, I will intentionally find JK, pick him up just so that he can scream put me down. People do it with Sugar too, because Sugar is like, leave me alone, but everybody else is so cute. Jimin is like, oh, where are we going? It's just so cute. I love that interaction in itself. I don't like that I have to take care of them. I am not a parent by nature. I don't like taking care of our cat child. But like I don't feel good about them, like, oh, let's plant these trees so we can eat. I was like, y'all should do that on your own. I shouldn't have to tell you to plant a tree so you can eat. But that is the game. That is how it is. But it's basically your standard mobile game. There's a game pass you can buy. There's diamonds that you can pay for. But the game in and of itself is truly not pay to win. Most of the things that you spend your money on is decorations, outfits for the boys. And you can get gems, but the gems are even used on outfits. And
I told you ahead of time, if it's mobile, they're going to make a billion type of ways to try to lump you into spending that real money.
And I did it. I was trying to hold out, but day before yesterday, one of these days, I ended up buying the season pass because I was like, I want it. So I bought it. It was $7. I don't like that I might have to buy it every month, but nonetheless, I did buy it one time just to see how it would be, you know, give a good review of the game. Then I got to more of the story and I dislike a couple of things. Let's go into the cons. So I feel like some of the simplest story progressions cost way too many puzzle points. And puzzle points is what I'll call them. You do a puzzle, you get a puzzle point. And you use those puzzle points to further the story. Now, why does it cost 5 puzzle points in order to gather BTS and have a group meeting? Why? Why does it cost 3 and 4 puzzle points for them to take a stroll? Like, they're not doing anything. You just wasting my time here in order to keep me on this game. And then they're slick. They'll give you these rewards to keep you on here longer. So there's a strawberry challenge going on right now. So if you collect strawberries, you get water, water, water. So they're like, oh, unlimited hearts for 30 minutes. Oh, unlimited bombs for 15 minutes. So you stand on the game longer. And it gets me every time. I'm like, well, let me just go through and use all of this. You know, you can't beat this. I'm not buying it. I might as well just go ahead.
They also, if you do decide, if you do manage to have great willpower, they do a great job of sending you a push notification telling you, hey, yeah, yo, man, you ain't seen the boys in a while. Hey, man, what, you gonna check on your island? Come on, pull up.
Basically, and it's even jokes. Like, yesterday you saw one of them, they were like, if you look at BTS for too long, you might lose your memory. And then they repeated it two more times. Yeah. I'm like, just y'all said are over crazy. And over. Y'all are crazy. Y'all trying to make me feel crazy, but y'all are crazy. And I'm not clicking this app. But another thing that I love about the game, you know, it puzzle point distribution aside, one thing I really love about the game is the large amount of inside jokes. That if you know, you know, and you get it. Also, when there's an issue, apparently there was an issue with the server a couple days ago. They were on it immediately. They said, okay, look, give us 2 hours. We'll fix it. It ended up being an issue with a new feature that they put in there, and they just took that away and it fixed it. Overall, I have fun, and it's incredibly addicting. And unless I moderate my time, I would be on there all day. Like, it is such a time waster and a battery killer, but it's a mobile game, so I expect it. JK's island has become a meme. He's put clothes on people now, but there is so much decoration in the island, and his score is so high because he's spending money that, you know, people were like, oh, look at all of that decoration, but you're not even on level 5. Like, you still got this stuff to do. But he showed y'all. He on level 200 and something at this point, I think. I was trying to keep up at first, but I was like, I can't do this. I wanted to stay neck and neck. I was like, I won't let you surpass me, sir. But I have a life sometimes. And sometimes I don't want to just stare at my phone. So he's far ahead of me. I haven't checked on his island. I don't know what's going on. Junie, Namjoon, popped up on the island the other day. And he is now a meme because he put his character in a banana outfit. And all of the vocal line are shirtless. And Sugar and Hobi are...
That's the part I don't understand. How do you guys get to see their stuff? Do y'all can just go to any player's?
You can go to any player's island.
Gotcha, okay.
But... There's only so many players people care about.
So how you know it's them?
Instagram. They shared their island tag on Instagram.
Okay, gotcha.
All right. Yeah. So for all the people that say Instagram is dead, not in the K-pop world, that's how you keep up with your people.
It's dying, trust me. No one wants to be on Adstagram.
You don't go there for ads.
Exactly, but for some reason, every time you go on Instagram, it's just an ad every 3 posts or every 2 posts.
It's worse than
that. I'm going to be on Instagram.
Overall.
Instagram. Ass to grab is what it sounds like I just said. Wow. Okay.
Overall, the game is really, really fun. It can be played by all ages, but I don't really recommend it because some of the levels get really hard, and sometimes I want to throw my phone against the wall because one of the tinies... do the bomb. There's like a bomb to help you clear off the pieces faster. It's supposed to help. Sometimes it does not help. Sometimes you just wasting the bomb.
Also, it should be a child. It should be like an age limit on it because if you're too young and you got your people's card information, you're probably gonna.
You're spending all the money.
Yeah. You know. But I think that's up to the parents too. You know, gotta be mindful. But yeah. Yeah. But overall, what's your takeaway? Or you got a rating? You want to say something?
I wrote a whole line here. I was like, let me just say it. I've cursed many a tiny time in my pursuit to get through hard levels. So if you have children, your child may break the phone because it's hard, or you may break your child because they're using all of your money. Overall, I'll give the game. I'm not a mobile game expert, but overall, I'll give the game like a 7. It's really creative. The story is really good until they're doing something that doesn't require you to do too much. The decorations are cute. It's very, it was designed with BTS's fan base in mind. They give you little photo cards, pictures that you can download or whatever they say, which is, it's something. They're very liberal with their reward system. Overall, it is a good developed game, and I would play it if it wasn't attached to BTS, but I would suggest if you just want to waste your life for a few hours, you want to de-stress. That's what I heard these puzzle games are good for people stress, and I can say that I've de-stressed a lot since I've started this game. But overall, I'll give it a 7. There's some things I don't like, there's some things I do like, but that's with anything.
All right. Well, we finally got that, anticipated part out the way, because I know you've been talking about this for a while, so it's good to finally get your hands on it. But anyway, I appreciate you guys for listening to. It's good to get back here. I know this is, you know, I hope at this point we've become part of the routine, you know, and I appreciate you for listening. Appreciate you for giving us a shot. And if you're not listening to this point, I appreciate you for, you know, at least pressing play. If you made it to this point, I appreciate you for hearing me right now. And all I have to say is you know, keep your head up out here, take it one day at a time, and au revoir.